Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Reddy, and I'm joined by Matt Two Rumpets. Happy New Year, Matt.
And Happy New Year to you. Or is it Merry New Year? I always get those confused when I'm talking to people from overseas.
We'll take a poll on that, Matt, but I will say we are the absolute worst at taking a break. We built up this big, for the first time ever, Missed Apex Podcast is going off the air. We're shutting down shop. Actually, in reality, we missed exactly one Sunday's worth of shows.
Yeah, and actually, we would have recorded a tech time last week had I not come down with a minor case of plague. So there you go.
Plague slash man flu. But speaking of tech time, that does illustrate the amount of different shows we want to get on. And in fact, for us, the off season isn't long enough because we have new shows like this where we actually go, oh man, we've had a chance to catch up on some things that have been going on. We had the races that went deep into the year. Then we had our two-part race review. Then Joe came into the shed. Then it was Christmas. And actually now we're catching up with news. We want to do our new usual previews, our prediction shows. We've got Peter Wright coming on to talk about driver contracts, because apparently there's been some driver contract news while you lot were all sleeping and eating your Christmas pudding. And I'm sure Joe and Matthew Carter are going to come into the shed at some point in the preseason as well. Brian Sims is going to come back and talk about not only some olden day stuff with Benetton in the 90s, but also what Formula One is doing now to reach out to universities and education centres. And then before you know it, it's testing, Matt. I think, when does testing start? February 1 or something?
Yep, absolutely. If I had a spare couple of $1,000, I'd be headed there myself just to see what was going on.
I might be tempted to have a wander around Barcelona as well. But we are still an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. Now, you don't want to just listen to me and Matt prattling on, do you? Why don't we bring on Chris Stevens? How's it going, Chris?
It's going great, Spanners. It's 2020 and I'm starting the year with 2020 vision. Oh, man.
And may I say, you look spanking gorgeous in the before time, in the long, long ago, when you had to wear those big goggly frames on your face. You were not a sexual, viable human adult, whereas now your life can begin.
I feel so great. I got a haircut today as well. Everything's just, it's a perfect start to the year.
Everything's absolutely peachy. Still with glasses on though. Sarah, unfortunately, a worse start for you.
Yeah, I'm clearly not a sexually viable adult at the moment, but you know, that's okay. It's only uphill from here, which I think is the plan. So I think it's going to be a good year. I've had 2 weeks off work. Brain might need a little kickstarting, but it's all good.
Fantastic. Thank you, Sarah Nicol. Right, Matt, I think it's time to look at the big, dirty news. Big, dirty news. Matt, I think you and just about every F1 writer in the entire world made some kind of headline like Ghosn in 60 seconds. The big news is Carlos, how are we pronouncing it? Ghosn?
Ghosn.
Yeah. Carlos Ghosn Tell me what was happening. Why was it news? Where's he gone? And why does it matter?
All right. It matters primarily because once upon a time, he was the person responsible for making the decision to bring Renault back to Formula One full time. That's why, in essence, we care about it. But what had happened was Renault owned most of Nissan through stockholding, and Nissan was getting unhappy about the way he was doing things because Renault was a less successful company than Nissan. And Nissan were feeling their oats, and he wound up being arrested for some sort of financial shenanigans that we won't get into too deeply because I can see your eyes already starting to roll back in your
head. No, I'm fascinated. How dare you?
But suffice to say, he was arrested by the Japanese and has been for the past about year and a half under house arrest. And every time they're about to let him go, they would charge him with a new, slightly different variation of the same crime. And he was only allowed to talk to his wife occasionally. Like, he couldn't even communicate with family. And apparently he'd had A, enough, and B, enough resources to skulldug his way out. And so this is what he did. And this is why, this is the story.
Wait. Let me guess. He had a paperclip, some duct tape, and a rope swing, and then he went off a tele... No, I can tell I'm not close.
No, first of all, he had the private surveillance firm that Nissan had hired to watch him threatened with a lawsuit, so they stopped watching him. Then he arranged for a holiday concert at his place of residence where he was being kept under lock and key. And that wasn't really a musical group. Apparently, it was like a team of mercenaries, and they brought in an extra empty case for audio equipment, like the big steamer trunk size ones. They drilled some holes in the bottom. They chucked him in, flew him to Beirut, Lebanon, which does not have an extradition treaty with Japan, and he's now free as a bird. And apparently he got in with a French passport. He has three passports. He had Japanese, French, Lebanese, French, and a Brazilian, I believe. And somehow he got his hands on a fresh French passport because he'd had to surrender his to the Japanese authorities. And everybody is just like fascinated, but mostly like, what is he going to say about all this? And what effect will it have on these companies and their earnings and therefore their potential going forward operations in motorsport?
Okay. Is anyone expecting that it's going to have any kind of effect on F1 at all? Or is this now just like an F1 curiosity? This is, you know, like what did Bernie do next? Why should we care?
I think it's sort of at the moment, it's still very up in the air in terms of leadership because the Mitsubishi, Nissan, Renault alliance was pretty much, I think it was just about the biggest in the motoring industry at the time. And now there's a big leadership vacuum. The whole thing's destabilized, whether that was the goal of whoever made the charges and all that kind of stuff, especially in that particular jurisdiction. It's impossible to say. You can't speculate. But with the leadership change being so big, it's got to have an effect on their motorsport divisions in all three areas.
Yeah, correct. Essentially, this only matters if there's legal proceedings between the two companies that affect the bottom line enough that they reevaluate their participation in motorsports. So the chances of it really having an effect, not much. But is it a great story? Yeah, absolutely. How could we not talk about it?
And Christopher Fonseca in the chat room says it's still more interesting than the French Grand Prix, which is apparently still on the calendar this year. Is there much more to say on this story, Matt, or shall we move on along?
We're waiting for him to spill the beans, I believe, January 9th. He's going to have a statement for people. So, yes, we may have more to say, but not today.
Let's tune in for that. Chris?
I think we need to give a shout-out to the chat room for the brilliant Carlos Ghosn puns that they've been dropping.
Let's do it.
There.
Let's get them out of the way.
So there's a great one here from EJ Hammer. Carlos Ghosn. Michael Dusseldorf, gone with the wind. There was another one in there. Carlos has gone Misan from Philip Allen. A lot of really great puns to start the year off.
All right. So where should we move on to, guys? Silver or red? Silver or red, Matt? Where should we go? Let's go silver first, and then let's talk Ferrari. Chris, why aren't we now talking about 2020 and the competition between Leclerc and Sir Lewis Hamilton? What's going on? Why is he not a knight?
So I know you have a very extensive theory on this, which I will let you do in due course.
No,
but
no, not really, no.
For me, it's another example of motorsport and Formula One not getting global recognition from not only from other sporting industries, but just from the world in general. I mean, who else was knighted this year? And people were mentioned on the New Year's honors list. People who were part of the Cricket World Cup team. You win one World Cup and you get mentioned on that, right? That's fair enough. I'm not saying that's wrong, but for somebody to win six Formula One World Championships and not have a mention on it is a prime example for me of how Formula One doesn't get global recognition.
Okay, so I am a cricket fan, but I'm not an expert on the current England cricket setup. So I've not sat and watched an Ashes series since the early 2000s. But I was aware that Ben Stokes really, you know, caught the imagination of a nation by hanging on that one test match. And no one thought it was possible. And he managed to hang on in there and save the Ashes, or temporarily save them. I can't remember how it went. But he caught the imagination of the nation in that one moment. So it does kind of feel like he's been knighted for 2 days of sport.
Right. I cannot agree with that term, captured the imagination of a nation, because I cannot imagine a sport more boring than cricket. And I just cannot accept it as a global recognition. But that's my opinion. But if you're going to award it for that, then if other people say Formula One is boring, then it doesn't matter. You've awarded one, you should do the other.
Right. So someone in the chat, in fact, it's Hannah, says it was impossible, but he did it. I refer you to Phil Tufnell about 25 years previous. Exactly the same thing. Not even a batsman trumpets.
A sport more boring than cricket, possibly cornhole. Just going to put that out there so people have to go look it up now.
Is that your whole comment?
That is my whole comment.
Well, thank you very much, Matt Leth. I do have an opinion. I do have an opinion on this. There are other Formula One knights and Formula One people who have been honoured more than Lewis Hamilton has. And it's hard to argue, Matt, that Lewis Hamilton is the most successful British export in motorsport ever. Like, no doubt at all.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't argue with that. And as an American who knows absolutely nothing about this, I feel perfectly qualified to have an opinion, which is they're nuts to have not knighted him already, based on all the other sports figures I see getting knighthoods. And there's not really a good explanation anyone's going to give me to change my mind. So there you go. Can we bomb something now?
Too soon.
Okay, sorry.
Just to kind of add on to the prior part of that, this is a British award. Lewis Hamilton is a British driver, is one of the most successful British sports people ever.
Yeah.
And yet he's not getting a British award for it. That's not even when you begin to think about his global status, how people know Lewis Hamilton. People who don't know Formula One know Lewis Hamilton.
Okay, inevitably, race is being brought up in the chat room. So what I want to do is I want to walk it away from race and then kind of maybe tiptoe slightly back towards it, because there is definitely black and ethnic minority people, British people, who have been honoured by the honours system. So it's not a question of, well, he didn't get knighted because he's black. However, I don't think we can deny that there is a cultural issue with Lewis Hamilton as far as him getting recognised as a knighthood, because he's very much into the American culture. He's very much, his family's from Grenada, so he embraces that Caribbean culture as well. And that doesn't fit. So Lewis Hamilton's face has never fit as far as being a British gent. You only have to look as far as when he got ejected from Wimbledon for not wearing the right thing, or he didn't get access to the box he was going to. People kind of delighted in that. And I've always felt that it was a class and culture issue rather than a race issue. But I will say, if you are sitting at home as a white Brit, ask your black and ethnic minority friends, have they ever had to prove their Britishness? Have they ever felt like their Britishness is under examination more than their white friends and neighbours? Because in Britain, and I'm going to trigger some people here, but this is my opinion, in Britain, as a black or mixed race person, you have to kind of bend the knee. You have to play the game. You have to do the extra to prove that you are what is, in my opinion, an outdated vision of Britishness. And Lewis Hamilton absolutely 100% has not done that. He has embraced his Britishness. He wears the flag with pride, but he also wears big feathers. He's metrosexual. He loves talking about American culture, hanging out with American friends, and dancing around with Rihanna doing his carnival thing. And I think that is why Lewis Hamilton isn't knighted. And I don't think he's ever going to be knighted. So as much as this issue comes up every year, we kind of need to calm down about it, because Lewis Hamilton, Chris, is never getting a knighthood.
I think maybe there's a slight argument that they'll only do it after he's retired or something. But I can't understand why that would be the case when other people are getting knighted while they're still very much active. Of course, there is the tax argument as well, which can I just say, if you think no one who's ever been knighted has never dodged some tax and been caught out by it, then I refuse to believe that.
Sarah.
I wasn't going to address the tax thing. I'm still not going
to. That's right. We can roll back to that.
Yeah, no, we can. I'm sort of stepping past that. I don't think, is there a possibility that even if he was offered it right now, he wouldn't necessarily accept? You know, this, I think, in motorsport is maybe it's something you would do and accept at the end of your career rather than the beginning. Whether or not they award it or offer it to people who are still active is kind of sort of besides the point. Would he want to be on the grid as Sir Lewis Hamilton? I don't think that fits with his current image of himself.
And then to step sideways straight back into the tax thing, what I would ask is there anyone legitimately? Because every time this conversation comes up on social media, there's, what about his taxes? The taxi tax. All right. Apart from comparing apples with apples and seeing what everyone in the honor system does as regards to their tax, is there anyone out there who really thought, do you know what? Lewis Hamilton, he's amazing. He should definitely be knighted. Oh, that tax thing. Oh, well, that's the thing that's changed my mind. Let's be entirely honest. The people who use that as an argument already don't like Lewis Hamilton and then use the tax thing to weigh in. I just think that is a poor argument other than anything else. All right. Anyone else? Anyone else on Lewis Hamilton? Good. Should we move on to the red then? The end, Sarah, of Sebastian Vettel's career. I announced and Joe disagreed, but it does look bad for Sebastian Vettel that Leclerc suddenly got a 5-year deal. I mean, it's incredible, really.
I think it's incredible that someone like Leclerc would actually stick with Ferrari for that long, considering how they've been doing personally. But yes, Vettel, what do we think Vettel wants to achieve now for the rest of his career?
Good point.
Do you think he wants to get back to world champion? He's probably not going to where he is, but if he wants to help build, if he actually wants to help Ferrari build itself back up again with whatever Binotto's doing now, maybe there's something fulfilling in it for him there. But otherwise, I can't see, you know, where else is he going to go at this point?
Right. So the thing we don't know about his contract is what kind of outs both he and Ferrari have. I mean, 5 years is a long time, but if they fail to meet performance targets and or he fails to meet performance targets, it could be a much shorter contract, as Vettel ably demonstrated while he was at Red Bull. And as far as Vettel goes, well, exactly how old is Vettel anyway? I mean, offering a 5-year contract to someone Leclerc's age seems to be a pretty good bet. But Vettel's age, I mean, when is he going to lose interest? When is he going to lose speed? Or, you know, you could already argue that perhaps he has.
How old is he?
Lost some. Now, he's around Hamilton's age.
What, like 34? That's hard. I do remember this is the age we're getting to now, Matt. I still think of, you know, me as the kids on the sofa cheering on my heroes and them as these giants. But I remember Sebastian Vettel to me is that young plucky kid who came in at Toro Rosso, won a race spectacularly out of nowhere, and then had the most unexpected death grip on Formula One for 4 years. Chris?
I think he's just slightly younger than Lewis. And the way I've just remembered that is that his first world championship, when he became the youngest Formula One world champion, beating Lewis Hamilton by a few months, was 10 years ago when he was 22. Which is ridiculous when you think about it at that Taylor Swift age. But for me, Seb still has a little bit of unfinished business in Formula One. As much as we've talked about the end being near, there's still something. He wants that, you know, world championship with Ferrari, that dream scenario. For Leclerc, why would you not take a 5-year deal?
Oh, yeah.
Especially with a lot of uncertainty in the future of Formula One. having something nailed down for 5 years, which is pretty rare in contracts these days. So I think it makes sense for both parties, really.
Now, it's interesting when we talk about 5 year contracts and, you know, what does that really mean? Obviously, there are going to be ways out. It's probably easier for the team to let go of the driver, but then they still have to pay him and they're getting to pay him a relatively low amount for that 5 years because he's not a world champion yet. Maybe they're thinking if they wait a couple of years and he gets a world title, then like Vettel, it's £40 million a year. Matt?
Yeah, well, Brad Neumeier in the chat room makes the excellent point that Seb's biggest issue is perhaps the Ferrari strategy team and not his driving, which I think is at least funny, if nothing else. But realistically, if I'm Vettel, I'm looking at this year and the first year of the new regulations in 21, assuming Ferrari nail it, as perhaps my best chances when the experience I have with Formula One in general might yield me an advantage with the new regulations. And if Ferrari can build a competitive car this coming year, because Leclerc is very fast and he learns quickly. Experience-wise, he's still pretty far behind the curve. And so I wouldn't write Vettel off in the next couple of years. But after that, I think it's Leclerc all the way.
I think it's a bit more desperate than that for Sebastian Vettel. He doesn't have a contract for 2021. So we're talking about 2021 as if he's definitely there. Ferrari can be pretty ruthless with drivers. They don't mind their former number one becoming effectively a number two. They've done it before. Raikkonen, Ferrari world champion, guided towards being second fiddle with Alonso. Massa was their champion elect in 2008, and he suffered the same fate. So I don't think it's beyond Ferrari to actually start favouring Leclerc and just have Vettel sitting there as a number two that he doesn't know he's a number two. But I just don't think Vettel is in. He is a league above historically and in the pantheon of F1. He's on a slightly higher pedestal. You may disagree or not, than the drivers I've mentioned before. He's a little more of a great than Massa, a little more of a great than Raikkonen, and I think it would be a step too far to have Vettel as a long-term number two. I think this is, we've seen plucky young Seb grabbing Formula One by the throat for 4 years. Now we're seeing old veteran, Rocky Balboa style, Vettel in the fight of his life. Nothing else matters next season, whether Ferrari are title contenders or not. The only thing that matters for Sebastian Vettel is Leclerc. He's got to focus every little bit of energy at beating Leclerc handsomely as well, getting himself a good contract and making sure he's at least an equal driver. I think if he gets beat by Leclerc next year, 2021 at Ferrari isn't even an option for Vettel.
I think the key part is going to be, like Matt says, that experience, but using it in certain situations. You will see Leclerc make a mistake where Seb would not. You will see Leclerc, you know, go for a move that is not on, for example, or he'll risk something a little bit too much. There will be some small errors because in terms of the raw speed, there's going to be nothing between. If anything, Leclerc will be a little bit ahead, you know, purely because of his youth and his just natural God-given talent, which is extraordinary. Whereas I think Seb had to work at it a little bit more. So I wouldn't be surprised if in qualifying, Leclerc had the edge. But the ultimate thing is going to be the number of points.
Hey, you young man, you might not have realized this yet, but work ethic is also a talent. Trumpets.
So, okay.
I was just
that was that was more of a mic drop, Chris. You'd have to recognize that.
Yeah. Well, I would have come back. I would have picked up that mic and slapped you around the face with it.
Trumpets.
I'm just picturing that. No, I think if we're lucky, we're looking at perhaps almost a Hamilton Alonso style battle at Ferrari next year. And if that's the case, who even cares who wins the championship at that point? It's just going to be so epic, juicy.
I hope so. We're going to have so much to argue about next season. Like, normally January feels like, oh, it's miles away till F1. Actually, it feels tantalizingly close. We've got lots of stuff personally coming up on Missed Apex. I mentioned some of the shows that are going to be coming up. But next weekend on the 11th, we already have a 26-car grid, if Matt races, for for the iRacing mat. And it's been a while since we've done it, but I'm really excited. And the practice sessions have got me in the mood. And you and I have already had a controversial clash.
Yeah, well, you know, you drive up the inside on me, you get what you get.
I was there, man. The lane system, dude. Anyway, I can't wait. 26 cars on the grid. There's still room for a few more. So email me spannersready@gmail.com and you can get in on that grid as well. Saturday night, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 races in MX-5s. And then we're doing oval racing. I did a practice on an oval race with some of the patrons. I didn't hate it. News, that's a revelation. I assumed I would hate it. I didn't hate it. I actually had quite a lot of fun. I know this is a bit early, but on April the 25th, we are going karting. The places are going for that fairly quickly. So get in quick. I've opened it up, missedapexpodcast.com/karting. We're going to Buckmore Park again. If you emailed me in 2019, last decade, if you emailed me, your place will be held until like the first week of February. So don't worry about that. Anyone else, email me spannersready@gmail.com.
And if you're umming and ahhing about whether you should do it, maybe you think, oh, it looks a little bit expensive, maybe go and watch the highlights from the previous event we held during the summer. Just search Missed Apex Karting on YouTube and that will totally sell it for you.
Or just turn up, spectate, and hang out at the hotel bar with us afterwards. You don't have to race. Just enjoy the day.
I was going to say the most important part is the piss up. Sarah, you're coming in that capacity, in fact.
Oh, cool. Well, not just for the piss up, but for the photography as well.
Yes.
And also for the company, because it's a really good crowd afterwards. And if you're a little bit more nervous about karting as well, it's a great place to pick up some tips because you can get to watch people of all levels on track together and you can see the differences between the more experienced guys and the less experienced people like myself, although I won't be karting this time. But seeing it really makes such a difference for when you go away and do your own karting at a local track instead.
I strongly believe that F1 fans are not as good as fans of other sport in participating. Like, you don't have to drive an F1 car to understand something about racing, Chris, but getting involved for you, I know you've given up on turning the wheel, but commentating, calling the races, turning a wheel at any level, karting, indoor, outdoor, sim racing, just helps you understand the competitive element and the wheel-to-wheel action of a race car. And I think all F1 fans should do it.
I do love the sim racing still. I'm not a huge fan of karting personally, but sim racing, give me any sim, I absolutely love it. But I think before sim racing became a very mainstream thing that was quite easily accessible, and even then it's not very easily accessible. Like, it is difficult to try and just do, isn't it? Yeah, if you're a football fan, you can just take a football to a park and kick it about with your mates,
yes,
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
For a motorsport fan, you either have to pay 40 quid for a karting session or for a sim session, or buy your own sim. That's hundreds of pounds to get a computer that can do all that, plus a rig and a screen and a steering wheel. It is quite difficult. So fair play to you if you do make that leap.
Okay, so the thing I always struggled with is you go karting, you don't want to end up with random people. You want to be racing with some people you have a connection to. And that is what Missed Apex Karting is all about. Don't be afraid to turn up on your own. As soon as you get there, everyone will be an F1 fan and a Missed Apex panelist or listener.
If you're going to do something like that, it's worth doing right. And that's exactly what we do, I think.
Yeah, hopefully we do. And I think everyone except the Australians, Steve, Amy, I don't think Felix is coming, and Alex Vangene, it won't be there. But Sarah, Matt Trumpets from America, myself, Chris Stevens will be there commentating, Bradley Philpott, Catman Turner, Kyle Power, all will be there to race on track with you.
Amazing as well, because Vangene is the defending champion as the Class A non-Philpott winner.
In the non-Philpott championship, correct. Let's go back to some F1. Well, Matt, from the excitement of karting and driver contracts, we're going to go to finances. Finally, we've got to that in this show. We're talking money. Have I misunderstood?
Yeah, our friends at Reddit, particularly Perzaprasm123, which I guess we can post
that's
later.
That's definitely how you pronounce that. I can confirm. I did my research. That is the correct pronunciation.
Did up a nifty little chart of dollars per point or euros per point or international currency units per point. And it was a pretty interesting look particularly because all three of the top teams, despite scoring, despite spending so much more money, they scored such a large percentage of the points. They were all under a ratio of one in terms of points per millions of dollars spent.
Okay, hang on. Let's just break that down for a second. So you're saying that the top three teams only spent $1 million for every point, or just under?
Under.
Just under.
It was up 0.58 for Mercedes, 0.8 for Red Bull, and 0.86 for Ferrari.
Who's the fantastic graphics person on Twitter that does all the cars that go along, so you get a pictorial representation of like how they did in the race? Who's that? Which account is that?
F1 Visualizations.
F1 Visualization. Absolutely.
But we'll get a link in the description.
We'll get
a link,
yeah. Absolutely fantastic account. And it's really useful for the races because you see as people do a pit stop, they drop back. But he did it for the points, for the team points in 2019. And I didn't quite realize the gap between the top three. I knew there was a big gap, but wow. I mean, especially Sarah, in the first like third of the season, it really did feel like it was slim pickings for anyone outside the top six.
It did, but then there was a lot more movement of those outside the top six in the first in the first big. And then after the summer break, it all kind of settled down for a bit. And the last few races suddenly took, like Toro Rosso and Racing Point, I think, swapped around, and Toro Rosso came out a lot better. But I also wanted to pick up that the efficiency chart that we've been talking about, there's a second version of it as well that the Reddit person We'll just call them P, did where they ordered a point for every place. So like 20 points if you won, down to 1 point if you came in last or if you finished. And in both of those charts, actually, made me feel really bad and really sorry for them because I really, really, really enjoy them as part of Drive to Survive. But Haas really looking a lot worse in both points, whereas a team like Toro Rosso is looking really good in these efficiency charts. And also you see their performance leap up in that F1 visualization chart as well.
You're looking at two such different championships compared to the top three teams and Formula B, for example, because the top three teams are all squabbling for places 1 through 6. It's guaranteed strong points, as long as you don't mess up or you're starting last and having to come through the field or you don't get a puncture or something like that. There's very little scope to fall back or to make big improvements like that. Whereas the rest of the teams, everyone else, bar Williams maybe, are all fighting over four remaining points paying positions that offer much, much less. So when you get these bizarre races like Germany or Brazil, and you get the big, big points from that race, it changes the face of the Formula B championship, if you like. And it can mask quite a poor season, like, as you say, for Haas, because they got a couple of really big scoring races, whereas the general trend was for them to be below 15th.
Okay, then. So at Missed Apex, as an organization, we need two things. So I need a volunteer, never volunteer, as I've blogged before, but we need a volunteer. We need to come up with a system. How can we properly reward the non-point scoring positions to keep track of? Because I would love to keep track of this kind of point scoring that we're talking about. So just because Williams got a point, where would they have come? It's a bad example because they came last in every race. But it would be nice to see those battles because they do fight. And with the exception of the odd Alonso 11th place, I seem to have some kind of problem, I'm going to have to park it now. Drivers do seem to fight for every single place, even for pride when they're down the field. So let's find some way to track that. Find a volunteer who will track that for us, volunteers to spannersready@gmail.com, or if you have a suggestion for a points system that we can do. But back to the chart. Go on, Chris, go on.
Well, what Autosport have tended to do in the past is create a championship that just completely removes Ferrari, Red Bull and Mercedes from the equation.
Yeah.
And you get 25 points for the top of everyone else, regardless of where they actually
finish. You could do that, but then you're taking away the reward for when somebody does pop up and beat one of the top six drivers as well. Matt?
I was going to say Reddit already does that. You can follow them on Twitter, and they update their standings regularly if you want to do it that way.
I was going to say, you get like the podiums that Toro Rosso got, for example, where they're just Class B wins. They're not, overall podiums. So there is a fault with that system, but it's one I quite enjoy.
I think just a system where we can have every position gives points. I mean, you could even do a real simple one and you could just say you get a point for every car that you beat. That's pretty simple. Every car that started that you beat, you get a point. So 19th place gets 1 point. The winner gets 19 points. That's probably the purest and simplest way to try and track stuff like that. But we can argue about that forever. I want to go back to this efficiency chart, Matt, and actually look at, I've had a good look at it. Well, Chris has been saying something. And it's fascinating. So millions spent per point, Mercedes still win that. So despite, obviously, I think they have the biggest budget. Do they have the biggest budget in F1? They're still very efficient. They've still managed to spend only 0.58 million per point. And then it's Red Bull second, 0.8. Ferrari very close, nothing in it really, 0.86. McLaren, Toro Rosso, very close as well. And then Racing Point and Renault, very close at 2 million per point. Then it starts to get a little bit more emotional. 2.7 for Alfa Romeo, 5.35 for Haas, and 190 million for Williams. That point cost them $190 million. Chris?
I think what this shows about Mercedes as well is just how far ahead they were in terms of the points. I think that's why their efficiency looks maybe a little bit better, because they're on a similar budget to Ferrari. I think Ferrari may even have a little bit more. Red Bull isn't 100% on that. It's similar, but it's not quite as much as Mercedes and Ferrari. And so when you then have such a big winning margin as well, I think that's why we see Mercedes like much, much lower in that ranking.
Yeah, I mean, the chart very clearly points out how many more points Mercedes won than any other team. But with regards to pure efficiency, I do have a question. I mean, are we counting, because Ferrari gets a lot of money from Formula One to race with. So did we do that calculation, including the money that's technically coming from Formula One? Or are we just talking about what they personally chucked in to cover the difference?
No, I'd imagine it's that's got to be based on overall spend.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
While we're talking about money, though, obviously we're looking at how much this is going to be affected by the budget cap that's coming in 2021. I would ask you, as someone who keeps an eye on these kind of things, to remind me, is there still a budget cap coming? And if so, what is it? The only thing I caught in the news is that McLaren are aiming to run 2020 at the budget cap, which I would imagine means that they are going to spend up to it rather than having to cut down to it.
Right. So the budget cap is inherently problematic to talk about. I want to say it's around 190, 200 million. However, a large number of things are exempted from that amount of money, including driver salaries, team principal salaries, like your top three salary getters. I think a lot of the marketing stuff doesn't necessarily fall under there. So in discussions with, Summers and with other people, generally what we are finding is that it's not going to make a practical difference in terms of what the top teams are spending. Their budgets probably won't change all that much. But going forward, if that number is brought backward, brought lower, it will begin to compact what their overall spend is. And it will have some effect on the ancillary operations, perhaps.
Wasn't that quote from Seidel about the 2021 season, i.e. when the budget cap comes into place in the first place? So if they're planning to run at the budget cap level, then I would think, yeah, why wouldn't you? If you can spend 150 million, then why wouldn't you spend 150 million? Who's looking at the budget cap and thinking, oh, we're not going to try, we're going to try and stay below that?
Bit much that. Ooh, how much?
Yeah, a bit much.
They're not my wife when I want anything. Yeah, okay, sorry. I think we've exhausted my knowledge or even ability to ask intelligent questions about that, Matt. So is it time to move on, or have you said all the things?
I said pretty much what I wanted to. I was just checking the chat room to see if anyone had any legitimate follow-up questions. But I think basically where we are, it's a good idea. The teams will have to be a bit clever about it, but it's not really going to affect the differences between the midfield and the top tier at the level where it's set with the exemptions they currently have.
Yeah, and I don't know if you mentioned it. I did tune out a little bit. Matthew Carter also mentioned that, you know, they're definitely going to be able to find, you know, ways to spend money outside of that budget cap. I don't think anyone is suggesting seriously that the budget cap is going to level the playing field. Like, nobody thinks that. What we're maybe doing is trying to just bring that gulf down just a little bit, Chris.
I think Formula One comes up with a really great idea in theory, as usual, and then we approach it with a certain amount of skepticism, as is correct, given their previous with great ideas like this. And I think the proof is in the pudding, but I don't think anyone's really expecting it to be able to do what it's intended to do.
And I'm going to actually put something out there in terms of what it's intended to do. We've all been focusing on it in terms of leveling the playing field, but I'm just going to say, what if it's more meant for the corporate boards that have to approve these budgets for these teams? We're looking at the next year or two. The projections for car sales are not particularly great at all. And we're looking at increased problems with global warming, internal combustion engines in general. There's a lot of headwind this sport is sailing into. And if you can go to your corporate masters and say, ah, yes, but now we have a spending cap in Formula One, then they're going to be less worried, perhaps, about runaway budgets and continuing to fund even successful operations. So it may be this is more a thing for the team principals to be able to go to their corporate masters with, rather than honestly being thought to make a huge difference in the sport itself.
That sounds more like a benefit for the manufacturers, people like Mercedes who are actually asking for less money from Daimler to keep them interested. But it's come about because the smaller teams, they wanted a budget cap, so they're getting a budget cap.
Let's just look at the chat room for a second. A couple of interesting points there. If you want to join the live chat, by the way, go to YouTube and search for Missed Apex Podcast. You can watch us with our faces at the top, and then you can join the live chat room at the bottom and chat along as Antoine, Brad, Othnell, Odevir, Sam, and Mike and LGH are doing here in the chat. Hansink makes a good point. I think cheating financially is much easier than technical cheating, and points out a little bit later on that the FIA isn't really equipped to do financial scrutineering. Othnell just jumps in with some information, which I think is quite useful. Just you were talking about overall spends. I think the figures here from Othnell, if we're trusting him, which I do, is that Ferrari spend a total of 435 million. Mercedes 420 million and Red Bull 330 million. So a little bit closer than I thought. Thank you very much to everybody contributing in the live chat. Matt.
Yeah, well, they're talking about all sorts of stuff right now in the chat, but I don't think the cost cap is a bad idea. But I think for it to really have be impactful, the number needs to be lower than it is now. And I think the plan is for it to move that way. But what I also wanted to throw in there is that the engine manufacturers themselves are talking about freezing development to reduce the spend on research. And this is outside of the budget cap on teams. And people should know that right now, the power unit manufacturers run engines 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They spend a lot of money on it, and they're having informal talks with, amongst themselves and with the FIA about ways to reduce that. And so we should not make a joke out of the fact that this sport will need to learn to run on less money than it does now.
What is the difference between the engine freeze, for example, like we had in the V8 days, was that they managed to get the potential of that engine so quickly and to the point where they were all on par with each other. But even after 6 years, we're still seeing big differences in the engine performance, which I, in a way, I like, but we still have manufacturers lagging behind because Mercedes and Ferrari just keep raising the bar. And I don't think we're ever going to quite get parity. So if we just suddenly freeze the engines now, you're going to get locked in with, some really good engines and some very poor engines for forever.
You know, I have to admit that the people who build these engines are pretty clever people. And that was part of what they were talking about, is a way to keep the engines at parity and to open up development if someone fell behind, et cetera, and so on. But allowing Mercedes and Ferrari to continue pouring this much money into it means that everybody has to pour this much money into it, which means that they will run out of money and stop doing it at a certain point. And this is a cycle that they're looking to close.
Wouldn't it be terrible to run out of money? That definitely feels like a good time to tell you that you can support Missed Apex podcast at patreon.com/MissedApex. I have been really, really encouraged that people have been signing on even since the end of the season to support what we do in our shed here, this little pirate podcast that, because of you and because of the support you gave us, managed to get 1 million audio downloads in 2019, over 600,000 YouTube views in 2019, up to 3,000 people watching us live with 700 people at any one time during race reviews in our live chat. We could not have done any of that without the support of our 379 patrons, our 379 members of the Missed Apex board. With my heartfelt thanks, thank you so much. If you would like to join them, you can go to patreon.com/MissedApex. There is a nice little Slack group for our patrons to hang out in, a private forum where we occasionally talk about F1, among other things. We do some extra content. We do a patron-only podcast where we have a bit more of a chat, a relax. We put the video equipment down, and we just have a chewing of the fats. And if you want to get us to know us a little better, that's a good place to do it. You can also get an ad-free audio feed from being a patron as well. But most of all, it is you supporting podcasts. Podcasts that get supported survive. Those that don't fade. And if you're happy to put your hand in your pocket to support Taylor Swift on streaming services, then I would ask that even if you don't support us, if you're a big podcast listener, consider putting aside the same as your streaming account. If you listen to a lot of podcasts, you're $7 a month and split that among your favorite podcasts. Chris?
No budget cap on that either. Wink, wink.
No. If you're a fancy billionaire and you, a nice callback to the budget cap chat. Yeah, if you're a fancy millionaire and you think we're worth investing in, let me know. Our ambition is limitless. I did tease that we are broadcasting in a shed for now, and that shall remain a tease until at least, what is it, Sarah, in financial terms? Until H2.
H2?
Meaning second
yes.
half of the year.
The second half of the year, yes.
Never heard that term before. I'd heard the Qs. I didn't know we could use Hs as well. There we go.
Yeah, it's just financial people getting lazy and wanting to compare different periods to make themselves look better, or make the company look better rather than themselves.
Well, I want to be able to do that. So look out for exciting location changes, possibly in H2. Or H3, which is in 2021. Right, who wanted to talk about Alpha? Who popped that in the notes? Volunteer, Matt Two Rumpets, at Matt PT 55, also follow Matt's lovely wife, who is an incredible writer, amongst other things. She has books that will entertain you and your spouse if you follow her at A Weaver Writes. Matt, at MattPT55, tell us about this. Tell us about Alpha and their surprise signing.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of talk at the end of the season about where everyone, at least everyone who got on the hype train, where Robert Kubica might rock up. And it was looking like Haas was going to be the place. And then suddenly Racing Point entered the scene. And then miraculously, he's back to Alpha, which is Sauber BMW, which is sort of like completing the circle for him a little bit. And they have brought him in to be their reserve and test driver. But what was really surprising about this is apparently they've not had a driver in the loop simulator for the last 2 years.
What?
Unlike every other team in the sport. And this relates to a certain extent to why they had such difficulties. They started off well, but they didn't develop well. And a large part of that is because they've not had the ability to test setup changes as the other teams do during the Formula One weekend.
Wait a minute. So every other team has a driver in a simulator and Haas doesn't. Can they not use their regular drivers, or they don't have a simulator?
Alpha doesn't.
Did I say Sauber?
You said Haas.
Oh, did I say Haas? Okay, sorry. Right, beg your pardon. Right.
To be fair, I don't think Haas were either.
Okay, yeah. Getting confused completely. Okay, so.
That is correct.
Let's get my head back in the game here. So, Robert Kubica, we thought it was the end of his Formula One career, possibly still is. What exactly is his role at Alpha? He's the development driver. He's their sim driver. Is he also a reserve driver?
I am not entirely sure without checking my sources. I know he's going to do simulator driving for him, and that almost certainly means he will do some practice sessions throughout the year to compare what the car drives like in real life to what he's getting in the simulator so that they can tune it. Whether he's a reserve driver, it would be pretty sensible and cheap of them to do that. But they may have some young gun from Formula 2 they're taking a lot of money from to give that role to instead.
See, for me, this is not a driver announcement. This is a sponsorship announcement. This is all in deciding to take their money to a place where they won't have to consider legal action for pulling their driver's car out of a race.
Michael Dieselhoff in the chat says that he will be a reserve driver as well, which is my memory. But my memory's pretty shot, so, you know.
So this kind of begs the question, without upsetting our Polish friends, is this a bit of a waste of an F1 development role? Don't we want to see like somebody with a more optimistic career ahead of them? Or is this the place that you put an experienced veteran so he can give you setup changes and help? Chris, you seem vocal and upset at the suggestion it might be a waste of a development seat.
I don't think it is a waste, because you want somebody in there who can deliver a decent lap time. Robert can do that. To be consistent, to be able to provide good feedback on the different things he's testing out and say, no, I think we should try this a little bit more, or this wasn't quite working out for me. Or maybe if we do this and that, you know, it's going to be about a conversation between the driver trying to explain what's happening inside the car and the mechanics and the engineers who are trying to improve the car. There's no point putting somebody in there who can't be consistent, for example, and can't give good feedback, which is exactly what Robert Kubica can do.
Just like Ken Miles in the Ford v Ferrari movie. Oh, sorry. I shouldn't have brought that up.
Oh, careful. I got somebody got upset with me for doing spoiler. I haven't even seen the film. And someone got upset with me for doing spoilers. It's a historical event though, right? Like, I definitely had Rush spoiled for me because I didn't watch that season. And then people were just talking about it because it was a historical event. So they talked about what happened. Actually, spoilers don't ruin films as much as you think, especially over, we should ask Sarah. She's the movie buff. Do spoilers ruin movies?
Not for me. I'm not the movie buff. I think you might want to argue with Bradley Philpott about that one another time rather than me personally. I'm okay with knowing what happens, because I want to know how it happens, not just where they ended up.
Right. Yeah. Brad does have a wrong opinion on this, because he had no idea how Le Mans 66 ended in the real world.
Yeah.
And so the movie was spoiled for him. I think that's ridiculous. However, all you people who were talking about very detailed things from the new Star Wars movie on Twitter, get out. I haven't seen it yet. It's only been out for 2 weeks.
What do you want to know? There's going to be a really hammy final fight, and exactly what you think will happen will definitely happen, because it's the worst storytelling in history, apart from maybe Frozen. So there we go.
I honestly don't know what to expect. I don't know what
Don't rag on Frozen, please. No. Love that film.
There we go.
Frozen is terrible.
Trumpets, you are in charge of this news wagon. So I'm going to ask you in a moment where you would like us to go next. But firstly, let me introduce you to my fine panel. It's not just me and Matt, you know. A lot of the time, I hang out with Chris Stevens here, who's a PR guy and a journalist, a very good writer. And if it wasn't for you in the early days, we'd never have been able to get like any summaries out, because I used to like just text you in a panic after a show going, I don't know what to write. Matt does all our summaries now, but you still do writing and stuff. And you are at Chris on Racing on Twitter.
Yes. Yes, I am. And I'm back at work tomorrow. So my 2 week holiday in quote marks has ended. Frankly, I'm a little bit glad actually, because I've been bored this week more than anything.
Boring people get bored. I could have given you Mr. Apexy things to do, Chris. You could have ordered a green screen.
But I was blinded by my surgery, and I wasn't blinded. I was pretty much sofa bound because I couldn't really see what I was doing.
Well, I'm glad you didn't go completely blind or die from your surgery. Thank you very much, Chris Stevens. At Decoding Dragons on Twitter, Sarah Nicol. I always have this moment of dread, whether it's Nicol or Nichols. After 2 years, I've not learned it, but it's Nicol, isn't it?
Nicol, yes.
At Nicol, Decoding Dragons. You are not a journalist. You are a normal worky person.
Yes, I play with spreadsheets and flowcharts and tell people that they've got their processes wrong. But, you know, that's not what people are here to talk about. So I'm looking forward to... So I'm planning out my motorsport year now. So we're going along to the Goodwood Revival this year for the first time. And we've got the W Series. So going to go along to Brands Hatch again for that, and looking out for some events possibly at Thruxton to go to. So that's kind of my focus for my downtime doesn't involve spreadsheets.
And we're going to be doing a W Series podcast again. I hope that we will get involved. I know you're going to take that by the throat this year, be a lot more involved in that. And there's an official W Series podcast, but ours/yours will be definitely better than that. We guarantee it.
We were first. Whether we were right or not is another question.
Well, maybe they saw ours and went, wow, if those idiots can do it, we should do one too.
Ah, oh, speak for yourself.
Can I just say, this is a cycle, right? Because Formula One didn't have Beyond the Grid before we came along. I don't think Formula E had Formula E Radio before we came along. We're the pioneers of motorsport.
I don't think we can take credit for Beyond the Grid, a podcast I very much enjoy. I was thinking of doing Beyond the Shed, where we interview F1 interviewers and ask them questions like Beyond the Grid. Like, do you get scared when you interview people? Are you ever scared that you're going to die? What's it like? Ooh, you're so brave. I love you. But I love it. No, I'm only joking. It's a great one-to-one interview, and I don't miss a single second of Beyond the Grid. So we are not pioneers of motorsport podcasting. However, we do try our best. Matt, has that waffle given you enough time to dictate to us the final news story of the episode?
Ooh, yeah. I think we should talk about a combination of Renault and the new personnel changes that have happened that may improve their outlook.
Okay, yes. Like, there was like a flurry of personnel changes that kind of went under the radar towards the end of last year. Fill us in.
All right. So I think the biggest and most important thing is that Pat Fry, who stepped into McLaren to run things while Seidel was waiting on his gardening leave to expire, is now off to Renault. And if you look at how McLaren did this year, and you think about the fact that he was there and is now going to be at Renault, you're thinking, this could be a bit spicy. And joining him will be Dirk de Beer doing the aero as well. And that means that we have being promoted, in addition to Zeidel taking the team principal spot, we have being promoted was Andrea Stella, who was formerly if I want to make a punishment.
Oh, I thought you were going to say make a complete hash of it. Sorry, can you go back one? Because I got lost there. So who became the team principal?
Andreas Zeidel, who ran Porsche in WEC.
Okay, so he's now the team principal of
McLaren.
Of McLaren. So, oh, yeah. Right. So I thought Stella was in charge. So what's the difference between the principal and race director, Chris?
All right.
The race director, think about what Eric Boulier used to do at that team. I'm not going to make an Eric Boulier joke here because that'd be really mean and quite unfair, really, because he's doing all right with the Paul Ricard organization and management. But it's basically it's very similar to a team principal role, but it focuses more on the on-site roles. You know, so on the race weekend, he's pretty much the man you answer to.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's like the chief operating officer, and the team principal's like the CEO, if I want to put it in more in corporate speak. His direct responsibility is everything during the race weekend, logistics, trackside engineering, everything like that. Team principal is in charge of the overall picture and deals with the other team principals and interfaces with FOM.
Okay, and as far as other personnel go, what else do we have to look out for? Because you titled this the personnel waltz, and it certainly does seem that way. And I'm going to be honest, that's a lot of names thrown at me. Who do you think is going to benefit most? Team-wise, who's made the best out of these shuffles?
I'm going to go with Renault. I think Pat Fry has to be given a lot of credit for the way McLaren turned out this year. Because we know that a lot of the development happened under him. He brings a lot of McLaren knowledge with him to Renault, which will benefit them tremendously in terms of being more of a rival to McLaren. And they have the additional advantage of their updated wind tunnel that will not be shut down halfway through the season in order to be refurbished. So I think Renault might be a bit of a dark horse next season and could give McLaren a bit of a run for their money.
I think on the flip side, however, there's the circumstances under which these changes are coming about. So the changes at Renault in terms of the people who are leaving, that's in response to what has not been going so well. So it's a situation where the team principal has acknowledged that he's had to do some growing. It's something he's actually said in that press, and he's talked about the impact of Danny Ric coming in. So it's a slightly more negative change, I'd say, almost, whereas the one over on the McLaren side is in response to Seidel sort of building his new team in preparation for 2021. So it's two slightly different circumstances. And whilst I think Matt's absolutely right about all those technical advantages in terms of what they're building up to, there is maybe a psychological difference in terms of how they're setting up these new this new structure.
And I will point out in the chat room, there's a lot of people being very, very critical of Paul Ricard, the French Grand Prix and Renault. And I feel absolutely duty bound to tell you guys that those comments did indeed happen. Yeah. And that's it.
Along with that, we have, first of all, iHammer, thank you for the donation.
Oh,
we
wow. Appreciate that. Super chat. Yeah. In the chat, you can drop us a tip, or you can go to MrApexPodcast.com. There is a tip jar there for people who don't like the Patreon model. Thank you very much. Although it's in Danish kroner, so we will have to do a conversion there. I think that may be a factor of 10, but still very much appreciated.
Correct. But Cyril Abitable has said that no team has spent more resources on 2021 than they have. And so I have often put forward the theory that in terms of how they were dealing with their corporate masters, they were really looking at the regulation change as a big chance for them to make a step forward. And I'm delighted to see that I was not entirely incorrect about this. That said, he is absolutely saying it's still no excuse if they get it all wrong in 2020.
Isn't he, though? It does sound like a little bit of an excuse. He has given himself an out. He's going, oh, yeah, no, we're definitely going to try in 2020. And he made some vague comment about, oh, well, we're aiming for top three and best of the rest isn't good enough. But if you say we are setting our sights on 2021, maybe you're talking to the shareholders more than anything, Chris. You know, maybe you're talking to them more than the likes of us. So when they do finish fourth or goodness forbid, in fifth again next season, which I will say as my first 2020 prediction, I think is far more likely. I don't rate Renault's chances of being top four in 2020. They can then turn around and say, it's bought them another year. But 2021, so keep pumping the money in. They're like those perpetual motion machines, aren't they, that go, we have the perpetual motion, we just need two more years and $100 million and we'll definitely give you infinite energy. Just keep on pumping that shareholder cash in, Chris.
It's a wonderful marketing opportunity, the 2021
it is.
Regulations,
yeah.
Because you can, it's a hard goal line that you can very much say, you know, to the shareholders, to the investors, and say, this is the time we're going to start coming in. Without it, they'll have just, they're just being vague, and they'll just keep adding another year on and on. They're like, this is the actual opportunity. This actually sounds quite good. What was the specific quote from Cyril, though? Was, I believe, no one is as focused on 2021 as we are. And of course, we've been talking a lot about, you know, how are Renault going to stick around in Formula One? I think it'd just be hilarious if it was no one's as focused on it because we're focusing on our withdrawal for 2021.
And that, I think, brings to an end a reasonable start to our 2020 podcasting campaign. Nothing went too bad. I only have to edit out three or four heavily litigious comments, particularly from our American brothers, causing trouble over there on the other side of the water. But thank you very much to Matt Trumpets for putting together our show notes, at MattPT55, Chris Stevens for always having his finger on the pulse, and Sarah Nichols at Decoding Dragons for always steering us back when we fall away from the wayside, me in particular. If you have an opinion on any of these topics, I do love it. Do weigh in on the YouTube comments. Do email me spannersready@gmail.com. Just remember, there's a human being at the other end of the keyboard when you write those comments, and I'm more than happy to have a long back and forth with you, have a nice civil discussion, and I do want to hear from you. You can follow me, by the way, if you want to, at spannersready. On Twitter, you can also follow the show at Missed Apex F1. We have a Facebook page. You can come chat to us there, or you can chat to us in our Slack group if you want to become a patron at patreon.com/Missed Apex. Remember, if you want to get involved, you can hang out with us online when we do the iRacing thing, the iRacing thingamajig. We have a Discord chat open so we can sit and chat. That's the 11th of January. That's this Saturday. At 8 p.m. UK time, you're more than welcome to join us there. And you will have three races in an MX-5 and then a race on ovals as well. It'll be a lot of fun. You can join us in real life down at Butmore Park on April the 25th. Get it in the calendar. Email me if you want to get on the grid as well. But you will have to get in there quickly. I have a feeling that this karting event is going to sell out much quicker than previous karting events. So do let me know. Until we see you next time, which I think will be Sunday the 12th of January, be brave, because wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. We're back. Let the fireworks begin. Sarah, where are the fireworks? I thought I understood there'd be fireworks.
Yeah, pyrotechnics. Comments of the week.
Maybe Steve will put them in afterwards. Maybe with the magic of video edit, they'll be here now. You never know. That's not bad. Could have gone worse, Matt. I know we didn't cover a lot of the topics that you had in there, but we can save some up for next week. It's a medium long winter, but it really is like nowhere near as long as the amount of time it takes me to realise that I've forgotten an award. Thank you very much, chat room. I was determined. I was determined to start 2020 off by not ever forgetting comment of the week. However, I have done. So why don't we get there by pressing the bumper that I definitely know where it is. There it is.
Comment of the week.
Comment of the week. The bumper sang and pianoed by the lovely Mrs. Spanners. Matt, do we have any contenders? It's been such a busy chat room. For January the 5th, what a dedicated bunch of F1 fans you are.
Yeah, it was absolutely delightful. And as ever, if I missed you, I do apologize. Hang on, I got to copy that real quick. And
no, you should have been funnier. It's your fault if you got missed. That is, now that's quite antagonistic and aggressive, isn't it? Unlucky, unlucky guys. It's the taking part that counts. It's all about having fun, but it's more fun if you win. Matt, who are our contenders?
Well, I think we have to put Sam H in there because he said, wow, Matt looks incredible. But he also said, wow, Spanners looks incredible.
What a wise comment.
Yeah, I mean, like, how could we not mention that? That's very clever. Always Anton Beale is in with, that's not a green screen background, regarding Chris's background.
Imagine, that is what we were going to do, actually, because our fantastic and fastidious video editor, Steve Amy, constantly berates little Chris, poor little Chris, from across the world. He's constantly berating your room and your background and not having a pro background. When you get a green screen, the first green screen image you have to do is an image of that bedroom with the bed as messy as possible.
I am currently moving office, so
nice.
I need the stuff and I can set it up and it will look uber cool.
I'll miss it. I'll miss the bedroom when it's gone. Oh, by the way, I've got that IKEA cabinet as well. But mine's clear on the top, you know. But anyway, who else, Chris? Who else, Matt?
I think Brad Neumeier has to be in for it. I think Seb's biggest issue is the Ferrari strategy team, which hurts, but is true. Lydia Cruz. Elaine System is my new karting team name.
Oh, nice. Elaine System. I like it. And by the way, Anton Patton says, did I get a haircut? No, this is just the very first time I've bothered combing it and putting stuff in it for a live stream. But I did it. And then I stood in front of the video camera bit setting up and went, oh, yeah, I should comb my hair. Yeah. Only taking me 6 years to do it. Who's like the winner or whatever?
Oh, right. Christopher Fonseca, the story is way more interesting than the French GP just because it makes me look good. We've got 9 million Carlos Ghosn puns.
No, none of them win. No puns because Nick's not here.
And then we have Mark Greenhow with laser eyes and Stuart Neal with, does Spanners keep Joe behind that curtain? But I think we're going to have to go with Lydia Cruz for Elaine System is my new karting team name.
I believe a maiden victory for Lydia there.
Comment of the week.
You know, when you come back from New Year and just somehow all your stuff changed. Like, I kept the settings the same. You leave your office in one thing, you come back and like a scruffy bear has shed its hair all over it, changed all your settings, updated all your software and just like deleted all the drivers and everything. So like you fire your system up and suddenly like nothing works. Absolutely nothing works. I had that for about a day today.
I certainly didn't spend an hour thinking I bought a monitor that didn't work until I found on Google that I just had to move the joystick one left click to make it actually show me a picture.
You
no,
got fancy.
Not at all.
You got a fancy
not
new monitor.
Didn't happen.
And we didn't spend 15 minutes with you only coming out of the left side and all of us going, why? Why is that? What could possibly be causing that?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.